Our guest today is Chris Ebi, and she is the Rahm and Haas Endowed Professorship, holds the Rahm and Haas Endowed Professorship in Public Health Sciences at the University of Washington in Seattle. She's been conducting research and practice on the health risks of climate variability and change for over 20 years. Thanks so much for joining us, Chris.
Thank you for having me on.
And where are you joining us from? Where are you right now?
I'm in Barcelona, where it's also fairly warm. The heat is building here as well.
Well, thanks for taking the time to be with us. So you have not only been researching climate variability and change for over 20 years, you're also co-author of a brand new report that just came out in Nature Climate Change magazine that looks at extreme heat-related mortality and also how if we stuck to the Paris Agreement goals, we could significantly potentially reduce mortality related to extreme heat. So can you first just start by explaining to us the basic findings of extreme heat related mortality?
The introduction did a very good summary that heat affects all of us. It affects some of us more. A natural part of the aging process as we become less well able to tell we're getting into trouble with the heat. There's been significant heat waves with very high mortality over the last 10 to 15 years. There were heat waves across Europe in 2003. The estimates are 70,000 excess deaths occurred in those heat waves. The research you refer to took the heat waves that occurred in London and in Paris and asked the question, if you hold the world constant, people don't get older, you don't have new people, infrastructure stays the same, all that changes is temperature goes up. So the temperature stabilizes either at 1.5 degrees, global mean surface temperature above pre-industrial, or stabilizes at 2 degrees C above pre-industrial, then what would that mean for mortality? And the paper clearly shows that as temperatures rise, as has been shown by close to 24 other papers, that mortality would increase and would increase less if we hold the increase in global mean surface temperature to about 1.5 degrees C, which is the aim of the Paris Agreement.
And the study actually found that in London, if temperatures were held to 1.5 degrees Celsius instead of 2 degrees Celsius, that 2.5 times less people would be expected to die from heat waves. Is that right?
That's correct.
Can you explain more about why people die even in cities like London, like Paris, like Quebec, like Montreal, that are wealthy, extremely wealthy cities?
The cities may be wealthy, but not all the population is wealthy. And as I said before, people are just less well able to tell they're getting into trouble with the heat as they get older. And as you noted in the introduction, there's a broad range of groups that are particularly vulnerable. It's not just children and adults over the age of 65. It's people with a range of chronic conditions, obesity, heart disease, for example. And as mentioned, also there's quite a broad range of drugs that really inhibit people's ability to tell that they need to drink more water. So there's very high numbers of vulnerable populations in these cities. As temperatures go up, the study didn't incorporate this piece of it, but we do know as temperatures go up, we have urban heat islands in cities, that cities do become hotter than surrounding areas.
Can you explain more about why that is? Sorry.
Temperature, cement absorbs temperatures, that when you're in a city, as mentioned, I'm in Barcelona, when you're walking around, when you walk underneath trees, it's cooler because there's shade, because of the interactions between the environment and the temperature. So there's it's quite well known that cities are much warmer than the surrounding countryside because of infrastructure.
And so the more that people are moving into cities, it seemed that also what was being named in these studies in the recent heat wave in Quebec was elderly people who are living alone, don't have air conditioning, and aren't being checked on by others.
That's correct. That also happened in Chicago in 1995, that it's difficult for older adults to tell when they're getting into trouble with the heat. If someone doesn't come and check on them, they may not be aware that they are dehydrating, that they're becoming too hot. And so it is quite important to have mechanisms to help older adults recognize when they need to make change.
Chrissy, can we talk for a minute about the other end of the equation for your research, which is connecting the heat waves to climate change? Any given weather event is something scientists are famously hesitant to attribute causality to, which leaves us journalists in a difficult situation because there is a narrative that no one in a position of authority wants to actually lay out. What can we say conclusively about the extent to which climate change is contributing to something like the heat wave we're seeing in Montreal or Southern California right now?
So on the broad scale, it's very clear that the increases in temperature we've seen since about the 1970s have led to an increase in the frequency, intensity, and duration of heat waves. You're nearly right about looking at one specific heat wave. There's a field of basically mathematics called detection and attribution that is taking a look at individual events and looking at the probability that climate change increased the intensity of that event. And with the big shift in temperatures that have been observed around the world over the last decade, it's becoming much easier to say that that event could have occurred, but it's pretty infrequent. There were very high temperatures in Sweden a couple of months ago, and I read that the probability of those high temperatures under a normal climate would have been expected 3 times in 1 million years.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's on the boards, say, 20 years from now, under a business as usual scenario where the Paris Agreement targets are not met? How intense, how frequent would be the types of heat waves we're seeing right now?
In about 20 years, we'll probably be at about 1.5 degrees. And we're very rapidly increasing as a world in temperatures. And so these events would become much more frequent. Some research done by Stanford University for the IPCC special report on managing the risk of extreme events and disasters suggested under a business as usual kind of scenario, by mid-century, many parts in the world would see temperatures that today only occur once every 20 years.
And what
so those temperatures would occur on average every year.
And what do you then relate that to again on increased mortality rates?
If we don't do more to ensure that people are aware of the risks of temperature, to get people to understand what it is they need to do differently, mortality will definitely go up. That's why we see very large numbers. There were heat waves in around Moscow in 2010 that caused over 30,000 excess deaths. So the expectation is, unless we are much more proactive in raising awareness, in deploying heat wave early warning systems with associated efforts to ensure that people undertake appropriate behavioral change, then very large increases in mortality would likely result.
There is this difficulty, which is that one of the ways that we've been taught to think about taking on climate change is having more people move into cities so that they're walking distances, they're using public transportation, they're consuming less in terms of driving and adding pollution into the atmosphere, and that this is a good thing to have more people move into cities. But you're also saying that there are many downsides to the movement into cities if we continue to do it in the way that we're currently following.
Almost nothing is all positive or all negative.
Yeah.
Moving into cities has many, many benefits for economies, for creativity, for all kinds of reasons. And yes, you do have to take a look at what that means and how do you provide cooling for buildings and how can you provide cooling in ways that doesn't draw on additional sources of electricity. It used to be that people built buildings so that there's good cross ventilation. There was lots of ways that people addressed heat in areas of the world that are traditionally warmer than they are in the United States. And so taking a look at our buildings, taking a look at how we structure things, making sure that we set up our infrastructure for warmer temperatures.
And can you talk a little bit more about what those steps should be, that cities should be taking? I live in San Francisco. We're dramatically hotter than we used to be. Nobody has air conditioning. We're just not built to be this hot. When we complain about it being 100 degrees, I know my friends in Southern California just think we're, unnecessarily complaining, but we're not built for it. So what are some of the steps that cities should be taking now? In addition, of course, to society overall addressing, trying to rein in climate change and hold it to the Paris Accords, as opposed to going past 1.5 to 2 degrees Celsius, what are some steps that cities should be taking?
There's quite a long list of steps that need to be taken, and I have a lot of sympathy with you. I live in Seattle, where penetration of air conditioning is something around 15%. It's thinking of everything from building codes, of how to retrofit to the extent possible buildings so that they do have passive cooling, using air conditioning where you need to, but paying attention to the fact that air conditioning, depending on the source of power generation, could generate more greenhouse gases and contribute to the problem. Another challenge with air conditioning is it cools the inside but dumps the heat outside, so it makes the outdoor areas warmer. It's looking at critical infrastructure to make sure that it is prepared. In Saskatchewan, in Canada, a couple of years ago, it was quite hot and humid, and the city had to close down operating rooms for several days because they couldn't get the air conditioned to what was required for operating rooms. So thinking about what that critical infrastructure is, how it could be better managed to make sure that with higher temperatures, that it will continue to function efficiently and effectively. Okay. And so there is this very proactive element to preparing for additional climate change, of not just trying to deal with what's on our plate at the moment, but think into the future, a very different future, and how to best structure our infrastructure so that we don't have high mortality and heat waves.
Well, thank you so much for all of that insight. Our guest was Chris Ebi, a professor with the Department of Public Health at the University of Washington in Seattle. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Her new article in the journal Nature is entitled "Extreme Heat-Related Mortality Avoided Under Paris Agreement Goals."